the news.
Welcome to the program. I'm Yvonne Gomez. This week, we delve into Singapore's plan to allow residents to postpone their retirement and the pros and cons of such a move. In March this year, the Ministry of Manpower announced that in 2026, the retirement age in Singapore will be raised to 64, while the re-employment age will be raised to 69. Currently, the retirement age is 63, while the re-employment age is 68. And by 2030, the retirement age is expected to be 65, with the re-employment age at 70. The move is in line with the government's aim for Singaporeans to work for more years as the workforce lives longer but shrinks with rapid aging and declining births. According to a Manpower Ministry study, raising the re-employment age from 67 to 68 in 2022 lifted the employment rate of those eligible by 1.2 percentage points. Partner and career business leader at Mercer Singapore, Sean Tan, is supportive of the move to raise the retirement and re-employment ages, and explained to me why.
I think in light of, you know, the demographic shifts in the Singapore population and also considering the current labour market realities, which points towards the view that the labour market is still rather tight, I think that the proposal to raise both the statutory retirement as well as the re-employment ages is indeed a positive development that warrants attention because it holds quite significant potential for the nation to capitalize on our longevity dividends and also bolster the economy. Very importantly, also, you know, fostering a greater sense of purpose and fulfillment amongst individuals in their longer lifespans.
What intangible benefits can we expect from increasing the statutory retirement age? I mean, you mentioned the benefits to the economy, you mentioned our longevity dividends.
That's right. I think the big one for me is that it meaningfully establishes a tacit understanding that seeking and remaining engaged in meaningful work too much later in life is now an updated societal norm. And this is irrespective of the specific employment mode or format.
What would you say then to those who want to retire as early as they can, cash in on their retirement savings, and live out their twilight years engaging in their hobbies or all the things that they couldn't do when they had to work? Wouldn't that also count as a source of meaning, dignity, and purpose?
Yeah, I'm sure these things are enticing. And I'll say to whoever, right, who is able to kind of do that, who has the ambition to do that, and more importantly, the good fortune of being able to actualize that, I'll say good on you and have fun. But, you know, I'm not exactly sure as to whether or not I necessarily agree with the prospect of spending 30 years at the golf course, whether that's going to be very meaningful. I think 30 years is a long time to be spending at the golf course, particularly if you, you know, account for the narrative these days that we're talking about increasingly a 100-year life and possibly a 60-year career. But I think the bigger point to be made here is that there are two perspectives. First is the individual perspective, and second is the societal viewpoint. From the individual perspective, there might be people that would prefer to continue to engage in meaningful work until later in life, maybe due to practical reasons or maybe just for fulfillment purposes. For such individuals, I think the norms, right, should evolve to enable that. Now, from a societal perspective, we have situations like, you know, what we said earlier, our tight labor market situation, the skills gaps that are, you know, still in a way a challenge for our nation and certainly the organizations and companies within. So given that, I think companies and organizations must have the opportunity to have access to a bigger talent catchment, and age inclusion would actually help us quite meaningfully to address these situations.
Sean, you believe that keeping individuals actively involved in meaningful work for an extended period benefits both the nation and its people, and that fully realizing the intended advantages, some of which you've already mentioned, will require a comprehensive multi-pronged strategy. What is the first thing that needs to be done?
I think firstly, work must be meaningfully redesigned to foster age inclusion in a substantive and practical manner. So here we are really thinking about reimagining work processes and rethinking the collaboration and alliance between human and intelligent tools, intelligent machines. I believe that these could unlock new possibilities and also enable individuals or different age groups to thrive in roles that are, you know, fulfilling, satisfying, and also engaging.
Another area is a commitment to lifelong learning. What advantage does this present to both worker and employee?
From the employer perspective, the markets, the operating environment of businesses evolve very quickly. And one of the main reasons is that, you know, consumer preferences, consumers like yourself and myself, Yvonne, our preferences and our needs are notoriously fickle. I think primarily because we're now exposed to a lot more information. So we change our minds and all that. So businesses need different sorts of capabilities and skills in order to keep up with changing consumer needs. And some of these organization capabilities are actually to be drawn from well-skilled human employees. So if employees make lifelong learning a habit, then they will be better positioned to serve the commercial interests of their employers. And also practically, employers are therefore less likely to release these employees that are better able to serve their commercial interests. So that's from the employer perspective. Now, from the employee perspective, it's really about employment resilience, right? Engaging in lifelong learning enhances employment resilience. The likelihood of them falling out of work due to obsolescence and irrelevance of their skills from the perspective of what their employers would require. And, you know, if done habitually, it becomes a muscle memory on the part of the employees, then if indeed someone does fall out of work, the person is better able to find work soon enough.
Now, one thing that is, of course, critical as we raise the retirement age is managing a multi-generational workforce, which can be very challenging. What advice do you have for how employers can foster the appropriate social dynamics so everyone can work together productively?
Yeah, the workplace is essentially a social environment. It is therefore crucial to establish a set of social dynamics within the workplace that would facilitate effective collaboration among a multi-generational workforce that leads to favorable outcomes. So people must enjoy working in that sort of a diverse environment. And here we're talking about, you know, diversity of attributes, not just of working styles, not just of experience, but also, you know, attributes that are brought about by, say, maybe age. So line managers can benefit a lot from, you know, very intentional training to enhance their ability to lead teams that embrace diversity in attributes. Because the line managers play such a pivotal role in terms of installing the environments, the work environments that will enable that. And very, very importantly, right, these practices must ultimately generate positive organization results, because then it will appeal to the pragmatic sort of considerations and interests of business owners.
What can you say about compensation for the older workers? I know a few formulas exist. One would be a percentage cut. And of course, this doesn't sit well with the older workers because they feel they come with a breadth and depth of experience. What's your view?
I think it's about a few things, right? A confluence of a few considerations. One is the value and value impact of the role. Second is really the expectations on the part of the individual, that we need to have convergence of the two views in order for this to work. Some of the more mature workers, they may not necessarily always expect an increase in salaries or to continue to draw the same level of salaries from the last job that they were doing. And increasingly, I would say the emphasis is on fair and transparent pay. So if individuals understand that they are fairly paid for the value that they bring, and this sort of a value could be different from what they were bringing to their previous sort of employment arrangement, I think this could still bring about a positive, mutually agreed sort of outcome. So I think that conversation has to happen. Because when we talk about, say, particularly in a re-employment kind of a situation, responsibilities may be different from what was originally performed by the individual. So I think it's about drawing the linkage between responsibilities, impact, and expectations. Of course, you know, the skills and the capabilities that the individual brings along as well, and bring about alignment and, in a way, engendering confidence and trust that the sort of compensation arrangement is fair and transparent.
And before we end this conversation, Sean, how would you describe the current appetite among both employers and employees for raising the retirement age and the reasons for the way they think the way they do?
I believe that there are still hurdles. Not enough organizations believe that the pragmatic benefits of doing that would outweigh some of their perceived costs and perceived risk in this undertaking. Some of these are actually myths, some are actually, I don't know, potentially facts. But I think at the end of the day, it's about trade-offs. Companies ought to be kind of be made aware of, you know, factually some of the benefits that they can reap from an undertaking like this, and be convinced that actually from a cost-benefit analysis, it is something that is commercially sensible. And so some of the myths will have to be overcome. Myths around, maybe they assume that some of the work-life balance expectations are higher for certain groups of individuals, which may or may not be true, right? And given a set of enabling work arrangements, right, individuals can actually still perform and exceed expectations. So I think commonly held myths ought to be debunked, and we need sufficient success stories in order to kind of convince, right, more companies that this is definitely something that is commercially sensible.
That was partner and career business leader at Mercer Singapore, Sean Tan, explaining to me the different views on the Singapore government's move to raise the statutory retirement and re-employment ages here. This has been In the News, a podcast exploring the stories behind the headlines. I'm Yvonne Gomez.